This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
That was Bruce Anthony and a song called, oddly enough, Sugarcane. You're listening to KPFT. It is 9 o'clock. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Walensky.
And Jennifer Inne.
Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. In the second part of 2 weeks of special programming for KPFT's Spring Fun Drive, first, a roundtable discussion about the archiving of the Houston GLBT community, featuring Judy Reeves, Andre Bourgeois, and Brian Riedel. Among the topics of discussion will be the Houston Area Rainbow Collective History, or ARCH, project. ARCH, which promotes the digital preservation, collection, and communication of the culture and history of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer communities of the greater Houston area. Then at 10 o'clock, it's News Wrap from This Way Out with the latest GLBT news, including the latest on the status of gay marriage again and in the States of the Union. Followed by Melissa Earls, a high school counselor at the High School for the Performing and Visual Arts, who will talk about the issues facing GLBT high school students today. In particular, she will be discussing the recent bullying of GLBT students across the country and what the local high school environment is like today. But first, it is Pledge Drive time.
Yes, we're asking you to call us and support Queer Voices on KPFT. We have operators standing out there to take your calls right now. You can do it online at kpft.org. But we'd like you to call. I mean, we have real live operators, strangely enough. And KPFT can use your money. I mean, we're a little bit down in our on-air support. And I know it's tough times right now. But this is a very special program. It's a very special radio station. KPFT provides you with community stuff that no other radio station does. We do more stuff in a week than probably all the other radio stations in Houston combined does an entire year in serving the community. The community, you know, the Federal Communications Act says that we're supposed to be serving the community. Well, how many other radio stations do that? We certainly do. We're volunteers here bringing on GLBT programming for the city of Houston and the surrounding area, so we're asking you for your support.
Also remember that this evening, actually all of today, our community partner is Houston Habitat for Humanity, embracing all faiths, dedicated to eliminating substandard housing in our community and helping low-income families purchase simple, decent homes in which to live.
So take a few moments and call 713-526-5738 and pledge to KPFT. One of the things that Jack just mentioned and we have to follow up with is that, you know, most of these other stations do the minimum necessary as far as helping the community, whereas KPFT does the maximum. Every one of our programs is serving the community. Everyone that is on any shows, especially here at Queer Voices, we're all volunteers. We do this because we love it. We do it because we want to get the word out about the GLBT community and what's going on. But we can't do that without you taking a few moments and pledging. So call us at 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT.
Leaking roofs, mold in the walls. Crime in the street, no yard, no electricity, no sense of home. Thousands of hard-working Houston families live in these conditions every day. The dream of owning a home seems just like that, a dream for so many families. But there is one organization making it a reality, even in these times. For more than 20 years, Houston Habitat for Humanity has helped low-income, first-time home buyers purchase safe, decent, energy-efficient houses. This spring, KPFT is proud to be a partner with Houston Habitat. We're helping build a new home for a deserving family. Habitat families build their homes side-by-side with sponsors and volunteers like us. You can help a family achieve a dream of owning a home by going to kpft.org and click on Donate Now. As our friends at Houston Habitat for Humanity say, we don't just build homes, we change lives.
I'm Ray Hill. This is radio station KPFT Houston. We're a listener-sponsored radio station, and we depend on our listeners to make contributions. I've been around here since 1968, and hell, we didn't get a transmitter until 1970. And I went on the air in 1975 with a gay show. In 1980, I started the prison show. Continuous broadcasting on public radio means that I frequently ask folks just like you to make contributions, tax-deductible contributions, to the radio station. And you can do that on this program. Listen for the number and give it a call.
You're listening to KPFT 90.1, Houston.
And just in case you don't know those magic numbers, it's 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
I do not hear any phones ringing, so get on the phones, call that number. We were down on our goal last week, so we're hoping this week to make that up. And by goal, I mean raising money and new memberships in KPFT. The number is 713-526-5738 or 526-KPFT. By pledging and becoming a member of KPFT, you're supporting not only community radio, but by pledging during this time, you're supporting and you're voting for queer voices in gay radio in Houston. And we all know that that's important because that's the only source we have for current events and things going on in GLBT Houston. Wouldn't you agree, Jennifer?
I agree. And, there are a few other shows. There's After Hours, that's GLBT programming. But we're the only one in almost prime time that talks about the community, what's going on in the community, the events going on, interviews the participants in our community, the organizations that make up our community, and the interesting people that make up our community. This is the only place you're going to hear them on the radio. This is the only radio station that you can vote by simply writing a check. Call in and contribute. Call in and pledge. And tell them it's for Queer Voices at 713-526-5738. Our community is worth it, and so is this program.
And you can do it in so many different ways. You can charge it on your credit card. You can have so much deducted from your checking account each month. Just a small amount that will add up. And that's all support for KPFT. We can bill you. You can send us a check. You can come in and drop the money off. And sometimes we get that, too.
Yes.
But any way you want to do it, we would certainly appreciate. So call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
don't you want me? You know I can't believe it when I hear that you won't see me. Don't you want me? You know I don't believe you when you say that you don't need me. Much too late to find. Did you change your mind? You better change it back or we will both be sorry. Don't you want me, baby? Don't you want me? Precious kisses, words that burn me. Love has never asked you why. Do you really want to hurt me? Do you really want to make me cry?
Hey, stop that. Stop. That was four poofs, not three, not five, four poofs and a piano. Extreme 80s from the Screamin' Party Anthems album. And Queer Voices is tweeting on Twitter, so go to Twitter and find Queer Voices. And what I'm doing is putting up the playlist of the music that we play, and so that's where you can find what we're playing as well as when I announce it. This is Queer Voices.
Last week we did a roundtable discussion on the future of the community, talking with a number of young people involved in mostly college age events and what they thought about was happening. On this week, we're going to talk a little bit about the history and, more importantly, about how keeping the history relevant by archiving it so that we know where we came from. Why don't you all introduce yourselves and what organization you're involved with so we could then start the conversation.
Great. Thank you very much, Jack and Brian, for having us on tonight. My name is Brian Riedel. I'm at Rice University, and I'm one of the people cooperating with what is called the Houston Arch.
And I'm Craig Farrell. I'm the chairman of GCAM, the Gulf Coast Area Museum of GOT History.
And I'm Andre Bourgeois, and I'm also here working with Arch.
What is Arch?
ARCH. ARCH is an acronym that stands for Area Rainbow Collective History. It's an effort to connect all the different people who are working on preserving the greater Houston area's LGBTQ history and to help them kind of do that by working together and figuring out what resources we already have and what resources we need more of.
And what is GCAM?
GCAM is an organization, it's a 501 charity that's been in Houston now for 10 years. Our mission is to collect, preserve, and distribute education about the history that's happened throughout the Gulf Coast.
Okay, and GCAM's been around a little bit longer. So what exactly what do you have? I mean, do you collect books? Do you collect? What do you collect?
We get that asked that a lot. We actually have everything from pictures to dresses to shoes to periodicals to wigs, rings, just about anything. A lot of our stuff is kept in climate-controlled storage, and we have displays that travel from time to time through different organizations around the city.
But there is a sort of permanent display at the Montrose Counseling Center. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. We have a display there that when the Montrose Counseling Center moved on to Bernard Street, we have the first floor walls, and we have everything from the first issue of The Voice on the walls there to several pictures of the quilt when it was traveling around. We have different pictures of people that were active in the community that are no longer with us. We have autographed pictures of people that were performing, a little bit of everything.
Okay.
4,000 feet of wall space.
Incredible. Yeah, that's pretty incredible. And I know Judy Reeves has been very, very much involved in that organization and very particular about how the stuff is displayed. And I understand that. I mean, you have to be to preserve it.
Right. She's, as a curator, she's always given me a lot of insight as to how to touch it, how to hold it, if I'm supposed to wear gloves. And it's easy just to listen because she knows what she's talking about.
Why was Arch created if GCAM already exists?
Well, actually, it's not just GCAM that exists. There's a ton of different archival-type groups that exist that are probably not known to most people. Some of them are here locally. Some of them are actually individuals. The thing is, none of them are very well networked with each other. For example, there's people who have the original tapes from TV Montrose that people at GCAM didn't know existed until, what, 2 months ago?
2 months ago.
Because no one knew that they existed except for a very small group of people. So what Arch is doing is connecting people who've been working in GCAM for the last decade, or at the Charles Botts Collection for the last 8 years, or at the recently formed Transgender Archive at the Transgender Community Center, and connecting them together to see, well, what all do we have, and what's really worth preserving now, and what do we need to rush to preserve now, and what can we kind of work on a little bit more collectively over time.
Well, and this year we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of Stonewall, which is considered the birth of the modern GLBT rights movement. And a lot of times, I guess, when people were making history, they didn't know they were making history.
Absolutely.
Or the wherewithal of being able to preserve certain things, such as newspapers, proclamations, costumes, was not even thought about.
True enough. And a lot of people don't even know that the stuff they have might actually count as great community history. I'm sure that all of us have, like, shoeboxes under our beds, in our closets, stuff in our attic, stuff in our garage. Probably not in a basement because Houston floods, right? Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of things that are squirreled away in individuals' people's houses who may not recognize that it's actually historical information.
And where should people bring these things?
Well, it's interesting. GCAM would probably accept a few of them, wouldn't they, Craig?
We would. We would accept anything and everything.
Yeah. And also the Botts Collection accepts donations at this point in time as well. Specifically, if there are transgendered objects, objects about transgendered history, I should say, you would be very welcome at the Transgender Community Center donating those.
I think Jennifer is her own transgendered relic. I wonder if she's listening. I'm kidding. So what are the addresses? Like, what's the GCAM address and what's the Botts?
Well, we have a post office box, which I don't happen to know the exact number of, but our address... We also have an office at the Montrose Counseling Center, and we accept donations or contributions there, and we will go through them, begin to work on what needs to be preserved or can be preserved. You know, Brian, one of the things that I think is great about Arch is that a lot of times there's gaps in our history. For instance, GCAM has a copy of every single twit that was ever published. However, you go along and suddenly you're reading and you realize, well, what does this mean that this happened in 1982? And you realize that's part of the Botts collection. Or you realize that the Transgender Museum has an item that fits in with the collection that you have. And that's one of the great things I think Arch is going to provide for our community.
And I don't think everybody knows what TWiT is.
This Week in Texas. It was a magazine. Well, I'm 48 years old, and it's as long as I can remember, we've just had TWiTs around. But it was the magazine that gave you the local bars, what was happening in around the state, what was happening on the radio, everything that kept the community involved.
And it was sort of ahead of its time when it started, that it was actually quality type of bound, and there was, and then it came out in color, and it was there every Friday. And actually, it was hard to get if you didn't pick it up on Friday.
It was. It absolutely was. One of the things that we just discovered with TWiT, too, is GCAM has just put a life-size portrait of a cowboy in the BRB. And Joe was going through some of the information in one of the TWiTs, and the only information we had about this cowboy is that it was in the original Exile. And then from the Exile, it went to the Venture Inn. She found out who we think the picture is.
Mm-hmm. Is he a hot cowboy?
He, yes. I'm a married man, so I have to keep it straight.
I am too. But
yes.
You can still admire hot cowboys.
The Colt 45s will soon have him on display in the BRB.
What was Exile? That's before my time.
I actually never went to the Exile, but I know that it was a really hot, in quotation marks, club in Houston, in downtown Houston.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
That was it like near Venture Inn? I remember Venture Inn, but...
No, it wasn't your adventure in.
I see.
Speaking of TWiT, another example of how the history sometimes gets told unknowingly in some of these resources is in TWiT, you can see the arc of the AIDS crisis as the obituaries grow through time.
Yeah, and I actually remember when they started publishing that, it was somewhat controversial because TWiT was all about partying, you know, having a good time, going out on that Friday evening, and then, you know, seeing that there. But it was a real chronicling of people who left us. And as they found out, and they started asking people, on Fridays, that would be the first thing that people would go through to see who's left us. And probably that may be the only place where people were chronicled about their life and being part of the community.
Right, right. And so a valuable resource to have all in one place at a time where you're not looking at it week by week, but as a whole. And this is some of the collections that we're hoping with Arch that we can make more available, whether we're, you know, we have an expectation to bring folks together, but we also hope to be able to do some things with indexing these collections to make them, make folks more aware of what's there and maybe make it more accessible, whether that's online.
What are some of the surprises, I think, if you start seeing this collection of historical stuff come in that you may not have had expected?
To me, I think the Transgendered Museum has just blown me away. They have things that date back into the, is it the 1800s?
1846 is a newspaper that they have found with what they believe to be the first printed account of a transgendered life in the United States.
Wow, wow. Now, are we talking mostly about Houston history, or are we talking about...
That's a good question, because what's funny is when you try to separate Houston history from the rest of the nation, you actually do a disservice to the importance of Houston history. I think one of the things that we found out in getting to know people who've been interested in local events is that, did you know that actually the national standards for dental care for HIV-positive patients were crafted by people here in Houston?
No.
There you go.
I did not know that.
Now that, you know.
Must have been Baring Dental.
I think Bruce Smith would have had a large hand in that, too. Yeah. And a lot of people were unaware of this. And so part of our national heritage is here locally. So to call it just area local Houston history is a smaller vision of who we really are as a city. And I think that's something that GCAM has recognized in its mission of trying to have a very large area of collection as well.
Right. That's true. One of the things that we get asked a lot is that very thing, is do you only collect Houston's history? And we don't. We collect any history. We happen to be focusing on the Gulf Coast because that's our home, but it encompasses A lot.
And that's also why we chose in the name to reflect that larger area by calling it the Houston Area Rainbow Collective History.
And you also needed a vowel in the acronym.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We want it to be pronounceable instead of like Elizabeth Q.
Or like my last name.
Oh, your last name's perfectly beautiful.
Anyway.
There you go. Well, one of the things we're also really excited about being able to do as a kind of cooperation between local area universities, existing 501c3s, community organizations that don't actually have archives themselves but might have their own community records. Say, for example, Bayou City Boys Club might have records. Pride Houston might have records. The Political Caucus. What happens when these organizations run out of storage space?
Importantly, most of these organizations don't even have offices.
Absolutely.
So they have nowhere to keep these items.
So one thing that we'll be able to do, hopefully eventually, is make a kind of common repository space, not necessarily in a physical location, but in a virtual location that everybody will be able to get to. That is one of our eventual goals as Houston Arch.
I think that one of the things also to point out, too, is the groups work so well together.
That's exactly what I was going to ask.
A lot of people assume that either you're the only one doing the collecting or that no one else wants to help you. And the groups really do want to work together in unison to try to make all of our history alive. I was talking to a couple of my friends ago the other day, and we were talking about how that myself being 48 years old, I very, very vividly remember what the AIDS crisis was like, because it was something you just saw every day. This generation doesn't see that. They live with AIDS like you would live with diabetes. And if we don't preserve the history and bring this out of literally out of people's closets that they maybe have in shoeboxes, we're going to lose it.
Well, and one of the things when the Harvey Milk film opens up, it shows all those bar raids. And people don't realize what this community went through in the early days, of how people were rounded up in bars. Usually they did it before election time, which basically backfired on them. But also that people were fired from their jobs a lot more than they are now. I mean, Houston's come along. I mean, this was a good old boy city. This was a city with the oil companies. And, you know, you would never be open at work at that time. And things are starting to change where most corporations have some type of non-discrimination or partner benefit. But Houston has come a long way. Or the referendum in the 80s where we lost so badly. So knowing where we came from so we won't make some of the same mistakes.
Right. I very vividly remember going to the Pride Parade and being petrified that someone would see me. And here I am at a public event. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be that way anymore.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Pride, I really have to give Pride Houston a large amount of credit for taking the responsibility for creating a public space for displaying community history over the last few years. It's become a really important venue for us as a community to kind of reflect upon ourselves. And I think Larry Criscione, one of the people involved with the Botts collection, it says it really beautifully. He describes watching people walk in and see pictures of people they knew who they hadn't seen in decades, and they tell stories sitting right there at the table. Say, do you remember? Oh, yeah. And it reinvigorates our bonds with each other in a way that's not replaceable.
Absolutely. I think, and it being air conditioning.
That is a prime desire. Yes, it is.
To have all that material around that a lot of people probably don't know it exists.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so what makes this year really promising is that the Botts Archive, the GCAM, and Transgender Archive will all be collaborating together on the history display this
Fabulous.
Year.
Fabulous.
In addition to the work from the students at Rice University's Intro to LGBT Studies class. And Houston Arch plans to be there as well, helping to show people kind of the connections between these.
That's incredible. Where do you see this all going?
Well, that's really up to the group of people in the community who are driving it. And it's not so much that it's like 2-3 people who have a single vision. What it is that the desires of the individual organizations and individual people who have been collecting the history really set the agenda. For example, I know that one of the needs at GCAM's got a great website with some good indexing of the things that they have. But what they know is that they don't have a catalog of everything that they have. They don't have the time to do that yet. They don't have the people to do all that work. So one thing that Houston Arch hopes to be able to do is to write grants to support that work, to provide that manpower, to provide the technical expertise that's required to make that happen. And I was hoping that Andre might be able to speak a little bit more about what that technical expertise involves.
That's a good segue.
Well, what people don't realize is that when you're cataloging a collection, that there's standards you should adhere to so everyone's data plays nice together. What we'd like to do is be able to catalog these collections in a way that they could tap into even larger catalogs nationwide so that, you know, a researcher at Cornell or UC Santa Barbara or wherever can also access these. And that's something that we will get help from the university groups that are involved with this. And then the indexing also allows for you to make things very easily findable when you're doing searches online. Right now you can do searches and find descriptions of the general collection, but not very specific things. And so we're hoping to be able to help out with that.
Is there
as
a
well.
Model for this? Is there other communities that are doing something like this?
There are a couple. And we're hoping to take what works from those and integrate it. We actually have a wiki site up now. And if you don't mind if I give that
sure.
address.
Please do.
That's houstonarch.pbworks.com. And this wiki right now is just sort of a work in progress, but what we hope is that eventually members of the community can contribute to it. Right now you have to ask for permission to be a contributor. Anyone can look at it and look at the information, much like the way Wikipedia works. But we're just, if you feel like you're someone who has something to contribute, content to throw onto the site, please fill out the login form there and we can approve that and have that come on. We're hoping that this kind of becomes a community center as we grow and get more information up there where people can virtually tell their stories as well.
Well, and there's probably a lot of people that may have moved away from Houston that may have some of these items with them that can contribute to it.
And that's certainly part of us wanting to put that online is it kind of takes the geography out of it. Another thing that does is that sometimes they don't have items. Sometimes they just have stories. And so we're also hoping to have an oral history component where through the folks who are coming together at our community meetings who are saying, oh, you know who you should talk to? Person XYZ. They're, you know, they know everything there is to know. And we're cataloging that now, making those lists of folks and kind of setting up resources so that we can collect these oral histories in a way where they will stand up to historical research. And that's also something that we can post digitally, so those can be available online and wouldn't be something that you know, folks would have to go somewhere to get. It could be readily available to
them. Well, we're going to take a little break now, but this is a perfect point to sort of jump on off of this onto the fact that I'm going to blow our horn a little bit on Queer Voices and J.D. Doyle. J.D. Doyle probably has the largest collection of queer music in the world, and he has been a contributor to this show for like 8-10 years. And on the fourth Monday of every month in the second hour, J.D. puts together a compilation of a particular subject. I mean, he's done transgendered music. He certainly has done holiday music around Christmas. He has done, he has put together and talked to some people that probably nobody else has talked to or interviewed. And we're very proud that he is part of Queer Voices. J.D. Doyle also contributes to Audiophile on This Way Out, which appears once a month. And that's a show that we carry here as part of Queer Voices. And all of this is a collaborative event that Queer Voices works within the community to bring everybody that we can together, let people know what's going on in the community, talk to the different segments of our community about the events, about fundraisers, about news and things that are going on in this community. We do not have a newspaper in this community. We have a very nice magazine, but we do not have a weekly newspaper that lets you know of the events. There's not a website that has the calendar items, and we try to do our best here on Queer Voices to bring you those things once a week. And if you miss our show on Monday nights, because it may not be a convenient time for you, you can listen to us on iTunes or go to the KPFT archives and pull down that show. And actually, you can pull down a show for 60 days. So all of that is a community service of KPFT for the GLBT community. So now we're asking you to contribute to KPFT to help keep KPFT alive. You know, it's tough times now. Pacifica is having tough times. We're not the top-rated station in Houston. In fact, we're very much a niche station that serves a lot of different communities that most other radio stations do not do. So we're asking you to pick up that phone and call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Do we have anybody to thank yet, Glenn? No.
Sir. No, that means that you're not calling in and you're not pledging and giving back to the community radio station that we provide. So call 713-526-KPFT. It's easy. The numbers are there, 526-5738.
And you can also contribute online at kpft.org. It is very important that you contribute to KPFT so that not only Queer Voices, but all the different types of programming that serves the many different communities of Houston. You know, we're sort of like a United Nations that works because we talk to all different parts of the community where most other media outlets pretty much ignore it. KPFT is a real valuable resource for Houston. And you know, in this entire country, there's only five Pacifica radio stations, and we're very lucky to have one here in Houston. And of course, KPFT stands out to be the only station in the country to be bombed off the air, no less by the Klan, in 1970 when we went on the air. And that's an incredible distinction, that that's how much they were threatened by the fact that these were voices that they didn't want heard. And since 1975, there has been a GLBT-type program on KPFT. It has been a commitment of KPFT to serve this community. In fact, the studios are located right in the middle of Montrose. So we're asking you to call us. Call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We'd like to get some of those phones ringing so that we can continue on with the show and continue on bringing the type of programming that we would like to do to educate and to entertain and to enlighten. This program is not just for GLBT people. It is for the community at large to have an understanding about our community.
We're a very small portion of the community, but I think our radio station covers a very needed segment of the community that's not out there. And we need you to keep us on the air. It's not cheap to run the station. This is 100,000 watts of power. That's not cheap.
I see that our phone volunteer is doing a tire change on one of the chairs. That means the phone is not ringing.
Well, and that brings up another point. I mean, we do run on very, very limited resources. We're lucky to have that 100,000 watts transmitting out to the greater Houston public. But, I mean, right now we're actually warm in the studio here because the air conditioner isn't working very well. But that doesn't matter. You know, we're all volunteers here at Queer Voices. And most of the people doing radio shows at KPFT are volunteers because they have a commitment to the community at large. We're hoping that you have a commitment to continue this type of programming. So call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. You know, the fundraising, the marathon will be over next week. We'll be back to regular programming. We're going to do a bit on a coming out group, and Queer Music Heritage is on next week. And then in June, we're going to be doing a lot of programming on Pride, because June is Pride Month. So we would like you to contribute to us so we can continue on with the type of programming that we hope you appreciate. So, the community is working together on this, which is really, really great.
And actually, thank you for that segue, because one of the things that's really important, not just to KPFT and not just to other community organizations who run on volunteers, to us, volunteers are what drives the collection of our history to date, right? GCAM has a lot of great volunteers that have been working with them. I can tell you right now that there are three volunteers for the Charles Botts collection who between them have put in 8,000 hours of cataloging time, and they're not done. They still have more stuff to catalog. The Transgender Archive needs volunteers. And also, there are several parts of Houston Arch where volunteers are more than welcome. One of those is the oral history component.
Definitely. In fact, at our meeting, which we've not yet mentioned,
yeah,
our meeting will be Wednesday, and that date is May 20th.
Correct.
If my calendar doesn't lie to me. And we hope there to put together our oral history working group, where folks who are interested in collecting oral histories or transcribing oral histories or working with posting oral histories online can come together, and we can plan our processes for that and moving forward and collecting those, not just the histories of folks here in Houston, but in the outlying areas as well.
You know, NPR runs this thing, or they just finished running it, this, I believe, which was originally run, I guess, back in the 40s and 50s on CBS radio. And those stories were, and they're just short stories, but they're absolutely incredible. And then there's another show called This American Life that we run here on KPFT. And hearing those stories are just, it just brings you, you know, to what was going on in people's mind and how they lived. And I can just imagine what it would be in our community.
Definitely. And we're looking forward. It's like opening a present at Christmas. We think there's going to be some really great stories out there, and we're looking forward to hearing them. And it kind of ties into what Craig had said about the next generation maybe not being aware of what things were like. And we're in a lot of ways a far more integrated community now, where younger queer voices are more integrated into the world at large, and it's not quite as isolated. So I think it's going to be a really valuable opportunity to reflect how things used to be to a group who don't know how that is.
Absolutely. We've come a long way, and in fact, you know, there's a concern about will there still be a community, because we may not feel as threatened as we, you know, did before. Yet, you know, here in Texas and in Houston, we still don't have any legal protection from being fired from jobs or public accommodations, or you know, some of the major corporations have non-discrimination clauses, but there are no other protections.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think just to kind of follow up on the meeting information, the complete information is it will be this Wednesday, May 20th, from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. in the GLBT Cultural Center of the Montrose Counseling Center on the first floor. And the address there is 401 Brannard Street, Houston, Texas, 77006.
You know what's an interesting point? I don't think a lot of people know that there's actually been three different community centers. Well, and now the cultural center,
okay,
is, you, I don't know if that's exactly a community center yet officially, but in this community that have come, and the first two, you know, fell apart. Because there wasn't community support around there. There's a lot of organizations that were around at some time that are no longer here. And some of them outgrew their lifespan, but some of them just fell apart because they didn't have volunteers. And knowing this history of these organizations and what their purpose was, I mean, there was a Bay Area organization. There was a gay Hispanic political caucus that was around at one time. And it just goes around. I mean, one of the constant things is Pride's been around, you know, consistently. There's been queer radio on KPFT consistently. We don't have a weekly newspaper. We've lost that. The sports teams have been around almost consistently. The course has been around pretty consistently and very much more professionally nowadays.
And I think what unites us has always been the bars, and I think that's kind of important to our history. And I know that's reflected in TWIT, because the bars kind of where the watering holes, the gathering places.
And Bob the Ads. And for the most part, yeah.
Yes, yes. And they always were scantily clad men. I like looking at the old, like, 70s and 80s twits, and they're all, like, bushy hair and everything. You know, all crazy disco. But I mean, that's kind of been our history. But going forward, is that where the community will continue to meet and reside? And I think the answer is probably not. It'll become more virtual, and I think digitizing and kind of making our history virtual and online is kind of appropriate.
And especially for a city like Houston, which is threatened very uniquely by where it is, right? We're semi-tropical, so we stay pretty moist, right? We need air conditioning to keep our paper from rotting within 5 years. And then we've got this, you know, Ike-type problem that comes along every once in a while and sweeps a lot of things away. Several archives were actually damaged during Ike and in previous floods and hurricanes. So part of the virtue of a project that seeks to make these resources survive past those kinds of events by digitizing them, by creating a copy somewhere that could be safe just in case, serves to keep us together far into the future more than just the one piece of paper could.
Absolutely. And we also in Houston have this thing that we're spread out so far that, you know, the community seems to be less and less so. I mean, Montrose used to be the central point of the community, but is less so now. Mm-hmm. Even though most of the organizations and the bars are in the Montrose area, people don't always come in like that. You know, make that weekly trip into go to the bars. They don't have that. By having it online, and also it makes it easier for somebody doing some type of research on the community and writing up theses and papers. And, you know, I've been part of a couple theses written, and, you know, people write it and give you a draft of it, and then you never hear from them again. So, you know, there's some valuable information in that, and if it could be posted somewhere, available somewhere, it would be great to find out what it was like growing up in those days.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of the things that happens in academic circles when you talk about Houston is that people know that there's history here. They know that Anita Bryant's singing here actually sparked our Pride Parade work over time. They know that our work in HIV and in transgender issues has been trendsetting for the nation. But their access to those original resources is really limited because they can't search for them very easily. There's a lot of people who lucked into finding James Sears's great book, Rebels, Ruby Fruit, and Rhinestones.
And he's been on our show in the
and
past.
He's been on the show. He did a lot of work at the Botts Archive, but because he was able to cook those things together, that story now exists somewhere else. Wouldn't it be great if someone were able to find that kind of information from the shoebox that was under your bed, but now everybody else has access to?
But, and people don't also always remember that when the original application for parade was requested, that a certain city council person basically had a stamp with a finger showing, rejecting it, or that the first Pride Parade was on one side of the street. The Anita Bryant protest was supposed to be just on the sidewalks because they couldn't get the permit. There used to be a constant fight with the police over them beating up people in our community and locking them up, and certainly we've come a long way, but people being fired from their jobs, people losing things, people being thrown out of their house. I mean, that still happens to some extent, but not like it used to. Knowing where we came from will help us progress in the future.
Absolutely. And another feature of this project that's been just really exciting from also a university standpoint is watching the different people on the faculty at University of Houston Central, Downtown, Houston Community College, Rice University come together to talk about the needs that they have for this. This is not just the GLBT community's heritage. It is a vast resource for people here in Houston who've been wanting to do work on it. There are faculty at University of Houston who want to write books on the history of LGBT movements in Houston. But because all those resources are scattered in different places, it will be hard for them to do that work and hard for us to keep up with that.
Well, and Brian, you're working on a project about the history of Montrose, aren't you? And I've always been fascinated. I used to travel around to a lot of different cities at one point in my life, and it was always interesting how cities sort of grew up. And as much as you know, I sort of say all these cities are McDonaldized, that there's the same, you know, franchises and stores and strip centers and all these cities. There still is some individuality in every city.
Absolutely.
And how it's fascinating to me of how the bars in Montrose grew up inside the neighborhood, not on the major thoroughfares. Or how, you know, for a long time, this lower part of Westheimer was sort of a vast wasteland because somebody owned the land there. And how, you know, public transportation figures in on this, how in Houston, because of the weather and because of the farness from down, relatively farness from downtown and City Hall, that we didn't have a lot of protest here, that, you know, people got out the street and protest. I mean, we had some of those, but not like a San Francisco where you can just grab all the people, all the bars and start protesting. And so we had different things happen here than developed in other cities. And I find that really, really interesting.
Houston, as a southern city, has been really marked by people socializing in their own homes just as much as they might in the bars. And the continuing importance of that kind of social connection in the LGBT community is also one of the reasons why Houston Arch is a great concept for the 21st century. Because a lot of people don't come out to the bars who might have a part of the GLBT story. For instance, there are a good number of people who will never set foot in South Beach because they totally disidentify with it. They're part of our community,
or
too.
That there's a door charge.
Yeah, that's another part, too.
Yeah. And in fact, the owner actually told me at one time that somebody will drive up in a Mercedes that is older, that just not, you know, there's just that thing about not paying that door charge. The other, you know, one of the other interesting things about Houston is how some of these parties that were sort of small social events, Miss Camp America, the Jungle Party, Bunnies on the Bayou, that, you know, were basically social events that when AIDS happened, that grew up to be these incredible nonprofit fundraisers and grew up to have a lot of people showing up.
I think that's a great example of that is Bunnies on the Bayou, which is now 30 years old and was before the AIDS crisis, and it kind of adapted and morphed into a not only an AIDS fundraiser but a community fundraiser in response to this tragedy in our community. The other party is, of course, Jungle Party and Bayou City Boys Club, and that was founded in response to the AIDS crisis and has become, you know, from a small birthday party for four people to raising almost $1 million in 17 years.
Well, and the one that's no longer with us is Miss Camp America, that has, you know, it was this incredible pageant show. Just absolutely incredible. I'm sure there's a lot of pictures and at G-Camp.
There is. We actually have the Miss Camp America crown was just given. We were become the custodian of
that. I saw that.
In the display case.
Yeah.
We have several of the costumes that have been used by different contestants. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize, too, that the things that happen today, be it the stop of an organization or a party that no longer happens or someone's home that got burned down, becomes a part of the history of our community. Every single thing. And if we don't start collecting it and unifying it, we're going to lose it.
I saw a display. Dalton had a bunch of pictures out. I think it's part of the GCAM collection. And just to see the pictures, I mean, that is definitely like snapshots in time and kind of capturing the chronological history.
Well, and let's mention Dalton DeHart.
Dalton DeHart, we love you.
Is an absolute treasure in this community of taking thousands and thousands and thousands of pictures. And not only in the GLBT community, but all over the community. And I don't think any of us could keep up with Dalton's schedule. He is all over the city, but the fact that he has taken pictures at so many different events within the community, and he's donated those pictures to GCAM.
Yes, we have volumes of Dalton pictures.
My little joke is that there are several clones of Dalton, and that he appears simultaneously around the community. I don't know how he does it, but yeah, just to look at those pictures, I mean, just to see the people, and you know, not even 10 years ago, how much time has moved on.
Right. One of the things, talking about Dalton's pictures, one of the things that working with Andre was, is how do you take care of albums of pictures? You know, I mean, it's one thing to have them sitting on a shelf, but 10 years from now, those pictures are not going to be able to be seen if they're all stuck together because of humidity that's, you know, taking over. And Arch has helped GCAM a lot with that kind of information.
Well, and you all probably know this much better than me, but do we even know if CDs or DVDs will be around in 10 years?
It's unknown. It's yet
exactly.
To be seen. Yeah.
Because isn't the way to actually keep audio files still on reel-to-reel tape? I mean, the professional library.
That is still the archival standard, is to keep it on reel-to-reel as compared to a digital format. If you commit to digital, you need to commit to migration, to moving it to whatever is next.
Aren't we eventually going to be on crystals and some sort of optical laser storage of some sort?
We will just plug things into your eye, and it will go directly to your brain.
Beamed into your brain, right?
Yes.
But even KPFT does not use reel-to-reel tape anymore, and the Pacifica Archives, based in Los Angeles, is just full of reel-to-reel tapes. And National Public Radio, I saw their archival system when I was in Washington, and they are they're still dubbing stuff from reel-to-reel to put it onto some type of digital format. And the thing is, they don't really know what that digital format's going to be. And I'm sure you guys probably have boxes of cassettes.
We have tons of cassettes and VHS tapes. You would not believe the number of boxes. We joke because we probably have one of the best porn collections in the world on VHS, and no one can watch it.
Oh, man.
Well, I'll have to fix that.
I have my own little private.
That would be a great fundraiser.
It would.
Oh, my God.
Well, we need to wrap this segment up, but I really want to thank you all, and you want to do some closing statements about where you're going to go. You got the meeting coming up on Wednesday.
Yeah, absolutely. Once again, the meeting information is this Wednesday, 2 days from today, May 20th, from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at the GLBT Cultural Center on the first floor of the Montrose Counseling Center, located at 401 Brannard, Houston, Texas, 77006.
And GCAM?
Well, we're still collecting, we're still preserving, and we still would love to have anything that anyone has that we can help preserve the history in this community. Thank you, Brian and Andre, both for helping us take a next step.
And you're on the web at
GCAM.org. Yes.
Great. Well, I really appreciate you all coming by this evening, and I hope our listeners really got to learn something about where we come from in this community, and we'll think about that when they pick up their phone and call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Operators are standing by. This is the last time Queer Voices will be asking for money in this particular fundraising cycle, and it's real important. We don't have a very high goal, but we are not making it, and we're really asking you to help out. Call us now. Tell us what you think about the program. Give us some suggestions. You can also email us. Go to our website, queervoices.org. But to donate, call us now or go to kpft.org, and we would really appreciate your support to support this type of community outreach.
And we understand the economy is not doing very well, and we're not asking for a lot of money. Just donate what you can. And, you know, it all adds up. You can do it online if you want to earn your frequent flyer miles, kpft.org. There's a Donate Now button. Or we would prefer to put our operators to good work and call into the radio station, 713-526-KPFT or 5738 are the numbers. I don't hear any phones ringing, so I hope that you're listening and that you feel compelled to contribute to great radio in Houston.
Jimmy Carper is out in the lobby.
The legend himself.
That's right. And so after the 8-second delay goes past and he finally hears that we're talking about him.
Jimmy Carper.
Maybe he'll grab the microphone and no, he's going to come in here instead. Oh, no, he's going back to the microphone.
Oh, let's have a race here.
Okay, he's putting on the headset.
And Jimmy Carper has been part of this community for a long time, and he's been part of doing After Hours, which is heard Saturday night, Sunday morning, and does a great program, and I really appreciate you helping out here with Queer Voices.
Well, thank you, Jack. It's good to be here. Always good to be here with Queer Voices.
Are those phones ringing out there?
They're not.
Not ringing, so...
They are not ringing.
What are we going to do about that, listeners?
This is a great show, and it deserves to be supported by the community. I don't know what more I can say about that.
Yes, well, Jimmy, you've been part of GCAM for many years.
Yes, a founding member, actually.
You're kind of a one-man history, gay history of Houston.
I heard you talking about Dalton's pictures, and I was here thinking, because you said thousands and thousands, it's 250,000.
Incredible, incredible, absolutely
taken.
Incredible.
Yes. That's just one weekend, though. I don't even know how he does it.
I don't either. Now, this show is extremely important to the gay community. It is. Think of this way out. This is just on a par with it. Just think of In the Life that you see once a month on Channel 8. This show
in the
is
middle
on
of the night. That this
it.
Is yeah. This is, they shove it out in the middle of the night, but we're here in the evening, being able to talk to our community.
That's
We're kind of an audio history file. I mean,
yeah,
kind of capturing the weekly events, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you do it in such a professional manner. And I can say that being one of the producers of After Hours, which is kind of laid back and free form. So I know the difference. I know the difference between professional radio.
And we're lucky to be able to have both type of programs here on KPFT.
Yes.
And I think that we should credit our executive producer, Jack Valinsky, for the professional.
Well, I think we should credit our listeners to pick up the phone and call us now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ring, ring, ring.
Houston has no idea how lucky it is because of the five Pacifica stations, Houston has more gay and lesbian programming than any other Pacifica station.
Well, strangely enough, KPFA in San Francisco, Berkeley, doesn't even have a GLBT program.
We're beating Berkeley? I cannot believe
yeah.
it. Wow.
Yeah.
And New York, too? Wow.
Yeah. It's incredible. It's incredible.
We're just a little political oasis of liberal radio here.
Well, and you've been talking about we don't have the Montrose Voice anymore. We don't have a weekly publication. So, a newspaper. So, it's even more important to support Queer Voices and After Hours and keep them on the air because these two places are the only place you're going to find out about things going on in the community.
Right, and you're listening to KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. KPFT has been on the air in Houston since 1970. KPFT is a rather famous radio station in that it serves the community. We're at 100,000 watts. We're able to serve it. We're in HD on the second channel. We're usually running the BBC from London, BBC World Services, but we also do some special type programming on the second channel. So we're really out there ahead, and we were talking earlier about archiving and the fact that, you know, KPFT doesn't have any more, what do we call them? Not 8-tracks, but carts.
Carts, remember carts?
Yes, I remember carts, reel-to-reels and cassettes that we used to play on the air, and it used to sound so bad, and now we're able to get this way out digitally.
It's amazing.
Yes,
it,
it's absolutely amazing. So the phone patch, you know, sounds much, much better than it used to in the old days. So, I mean, we don't spend a lot of money on this stuff, but we do try to make it easy.
And you have a very happy Glenn, too, because I have this nice, shiny new board, and I have this auxiliary board over here that controls all of your microphones.
Yes, and it's time, it's 10 o'clock, so we need to move on.
Yes.
713-526-5738.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
I'm Chris Wilson.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 9, 2009. A Greek court has annulled the country's first known same-gender civil marriages, which were performed on the small Aegean island of Telos last year. Activists have cited a loophole in the Greek marriage laws that don't specify the gender of the partners. The court on the island of Rhodes, which has jurisdiction over the island, ruled this week that Greek law makes no specific provision for same-gender weddings. The ceremonies for one male couple and one female couple were conducted by Telos Mayor Tassos Alifaris, who found himself in hot water for doing so. The marriages drew strong criticism from the country's powerful Orthodox Church, which counts 90% of the population as members. Greece's justice ministry had also condemned the weddings as illegal. The married lesbian couple told reporters this week that the country's finance ministry had nevertheless accepted their joint tax return. The court ruling was not unexpected. The couple's lawyer, who said they'd file an appeal, said the case would likely wind up in the European Court of Human Rights. Gays and lesbians enjoy some legal protections under Greek law, mainly in the areas of employment and housing. But a government-proposed civil unions law last year specifically excluded same-gender couples. The legal case against the Turkish LGBT group Lambda Istanbul returned to a local court in late April, and the organization was granted permission to continue operating. The same court ordered the group shut down in May 2008, ruling that its objectives violate the country's moral and family values. But Turkey's Supreme Court of Appeal overturned that decision in November and sent the case back to the Third Civil Court of First Instance for a new ruling. Activists remain concerned, however, about one sentence in the Supreme Court decision which says, "Dissolution of the defendant association could still be demanded if it should act counter to its constitution in the ways of encouraging or provoking gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual, and transvestite behavior or acting with the aim of spreading such sexual orientations." Lambda Istanbul issued a statement saying that it will only feel truly safe when the Turkish constitution is amended to ban discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, one of its long-standing goals. "The constitutional safeguard is a must," the group said, "to hinder any homophobic interpretations of those vague concepts in law." The group Lesbians, Gays, and Bisexuals of Botswana has sued their government over the nation's ban on consensual adult same-gender sex. The government has already refused to allow the activists to register as an official organization. Uyapo Ndadi, an attorney and legal officer for the Botswana Network of Ethics, Law, and HIV/AIDS, which is supporting the lawsuit, said that the law that criminalizes homosexuality violates the right to privacy and freedom of association. Group members say that the law makes gay and lesbian people criminals in their own country. Botswana's appeals court rejected a challenge to the sodomy law in 2003, arguing that the Southern African country was not ready to accept homosexuality.
Moscow is still not ready. City officials have banned yet another LGBT pride march, this one scheduled for May 16th, which coincides with the Eurovision Song Contest, a wildly popular continent-wide talent competition. The Russian capital is hosting the event this year, which is expected to draw hundreds of thousands of fans from across Europe. "It is not a secret that we have a large gay audience," a Eurovision official acknowledged, "and we respect everyone's backgrounds." But Sergei Soy, a spokesman for notoriously homophobic Mayor Yuri Lushkov, said of LGBT pride events that, "Not only do they destroy morals within our society, but they consciously provoke disorder which threatens the lives of Muscovites and visitors." He said that any unsanctioned events would be toughly stopped by law enforcement agencies. LGBT activists did manage to elude police and hold a few well-planned snap public pride events in 2008. Organizer Nikolai Alexeyev promised similar actions this year. He said on his website, gayrussia.ru, that "this is our right and it is guaranteed by the Constitution. No official, including the Moscow mayor, has the right to violate it." Moscow Pride has six discrimination cases pending against Mayor Lushkov at the slow-moving European Court of Human Rights for banning the Pride events, and an additional case against Russian President Dmitry Medvedev for refusing to intervene.
Meanwhile, Russian lawmakers rejected a so-called gay propaganda bill this week. The measure would have made it a criminal offense for anyone who openly demonstrated a homosexual way of life and a homosexual orientation to hold jobs in education or in the military. The legislation mandated a sentence of from 2 to 5 years in prison. It needed 226 votes to proceed. Only 90 deputies voted for it.
The move toward marriage equality in the U.S. has gone into high gear. Maine became the fifth U.S. state to open civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples this week, with Democratic Governor John Baldacci's signature on an equality bill less than an hour after it received final passage in the legislature. While he'd publicly favored civil unions in the past, Baldacci said that, "I have come to believe that this is a question of fairness and of equal protection under the law, and that a civil union is not equal to civil marriage." Iowa's Supreme Court unanimously ruled in April that the ban on same-gender marriage violated the state constitution, and Vermont lawmakers overrode Republican Governor Jim Douglas's veto soon thereafter to make it the first state to legislate marriage equality. Same-gender couples have been tying the knot in Massachusetts since 2004 and in Connecticut since 2008. The New Hampshire legislature also approved a marriage equality bill this week, but Democratic Governor John Lynch has publicly voiced his reluctance to sign it, saying he favors the state's two-year-old civil unions law. As of this report, he's not signed the marriage equality bill, which could become law without his signature if he takes no action.
Gay and lesbian couples may not be able to marry in Maine anytime soon, however. The law would normally go into effect 90 days after the legislature adjourns, which is usually in late June. But just as they did in California, opponents have vowed to pursue what's called a people's veto in Maine, a public referendum to overturn the law. They would need to collect about 55,000 signatures within 90 days after the legislature adjourns to get the question on the ballot. If that happens, the law would be suspended until a referendum could be held. That would be in November at the earliest, and more likely in June 2010.
A move is also underway in Washington to overturn a measure to expand the state's existing domestic partners law. The bill giving same-gender couples virtually all the other rights of marriage but the name passed the state legislature in April. Democratic Governor Christine Gregoire's signature is expected sometime soon. According to the Seattle Times, Referendum 71 was filed by the Washington Values Alliance. Supporters need to gather more than 120,000 valid voter signatures by July 25th to put the issue on the ballot. The filing of the referendum delays implementation of the law until the signatures are counted. If the referendum qualifies for the ballot, the fate of the law will be decided by the voters in November.
Washington, D.C. Mayor Adrian Fenty signed a bill this week to recognize same-gender civil marriages performed legally in other jurisdictions. The bill, which was approved 12-1 in a final vote by the City Council, now moves to the U.S. Congress, which, under Home Rule, has oversight on all D.C. legislation. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said this week, however, that Congress would not block the bill's passage. But a coalition of conservative African-American preachers that has vocally opposed the marriage recognition bill vowed to mount an initiative campaign to overturn it. The single dissenting vote on the city council came from former Mayor Marion Barry, who has apparently found religion since his 1990 arrest by the FBI after a hidden camera showed him smoking crack cocaine in a district hotel room with a woman who was not his wife. As mayor, he had generally supported LGBT rights issues. Particularly disappointed in Barry's vote was his longtime friend David Catania, one of two openly gay D.C. council members. "I want to do what Marion Barry has done four times," he told a local public radio station. "I want to get married."
And finally, when then-New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani was forced to leave home during a nasty divorce in 2001, his second, he stayed for months with his gay friends Howard Coppell and Mark Sow in the couple's multi-million-dollar Manhattan home. He eventually invited them in to his wedding to Judith Nathan, the other woman who prompted that divorce. He seemed to enjoy appearing in drag and touting his support for LGBT rights. But Giuliani has signaled a possible GOP run for governor and has already voiced opposition to a pending marriage equality bill in the state legislature. So when Coppell and Sow were married this week in Connecticut, their old roommate wasn't there. Coppell told the New York Post that Rudy and Judith were both invited with a beautiful written invitation by mail, but Giuliani had an aide call to say he would not be there. "I danced at his wedding, and it would have been nice if he'd danced at mine," Coppell told the Post. "But he said he understood the politics before pals no-show. If he decides to run for governor, he's a Republican, and he's taking a Republican stand."
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 9th, 2009. written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
This is Queer Voices.
One ringy dingy. We have one person to thank who called in because Jimmy Carper was out there answering the phones.
Do we want to acknowledge their name?
The first name, yes. Karen.
Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
Of course, yeah. I had to, you know, Jimmy, I had to ask, you know, chicken scratch. Like, what is this? It's the hieroglyphics actually spell Karen.
Is it like in a cuneiform or like,
yes,
like Egyptian?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cuneiform. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay.
Well, in the studio...
Well, you know, Jimmy goes back a few years, so...
No, it's not that far.
Sorry, Jimmy.
drawings.
I would like to welcome our special guest for the next part of the hour. First of all, I'm Brian Levinka, and I'm joined
Jennifer
by...
Jennifer Renee.
Jennifer Renee. And I have a high school student, or... High school counselor who actually went to high school with me, so she kind of knows.
Oh, my God.
Back in the day,
she
we went to the same
so
high school.
So young
what,
to
what,
have gone with you.
What does that mean? Her name is Melissa Earls, but I know her as Melissa Williams.
I just knew you needed a counselor. That's why she's here.
That's exactly right. Melissa,
we won't
welcome.
Talk about high school. Okay.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Brian.
Now, you're at the high school for the performing and visual arts, correct?
Yes.
That's basically the gay high school, I would say.
Now that's not a nice thing to say.
Performing and visual arts.
I'm not saying you're
performing and visual arts.
You're implying that being gay is bad. I mean,
no, there may be straight people there.
Well, I'm sure there are.
Yes, there are.
We have to have some, but so you're very qualified to talk about high school issues and counseling and mm-hmm. what the environment is today in high schools, especially for GLBT students.
Mm-hmm.
How would you, what is high school like today versus when I was in high school?
Well, it's you know, they say the more things change, the more they stay the same, but there has been quite a bit of change. I think one of the big changes is there's more awareness and also acknowledgement of the support that's needed for GLBT students. And it has been, you know, supported by policy with no tolerance on bullying, organizations like Hatch and the Gay Straight Alliance organizations that, you know, some schools have. I think it's better than it used to be in some respects, but there still needs to be more done to provide support and services for students.
How much bullying is there really at the high school for the performing arts?
Well, in the 6 years that I've been there, in regards to just bullying in general, not a whole lot.
Is that because they don't have athletic sport teams?
Oh, boy. See, now I'm an ex-athlete.
She is. I remember her days.
Hey, I played football. Ran track. I've done all those things. I know what they talk about.
You do have a nice arm. But, no, I think it's...
All the love to hold you with.
I really think that in general our students, in particular because of our size and our focus on the arts, bullying just really is not one of those things that, I mean, we're going to pick on the little girl because she likes purple. It's not really our thing. And we just really have a supportive environment where I'm at. And that's really, it's typical of a lot of schools in a lot of ways. Across the board, but I think our unique status as an art school and the way that we get to know the kids over the years and they get to know us, kind of sets the scene for a supportive environment.
What usually happens when a student is bullied at maybe other high schools? What do they do? How do the counselors react?
Okay, well, it's different depending on the availability of a counselor. That's one thing that's really needed. We need more counselors, and there needs to be a counselor in every school. There are schools where middle schools where it's just a melee of things that happen in middle school. You're not a little kid anymore. You're not a big kid, but
you're trying to discover who you are.
Right. You want to be
something. They need counselors more so than others.
They really do, and
that's a shame.
It's a lack of support there. But what happen, if let's just say if I were a parent and my kid was being bullied, I would call the school and say, hey, I need y'all to do something. There's this kid or group of kids bullying my child. I need something done. What the counselor should do is to address the issue in accordance with the policies that are supported by state law. You know, there are awareness programs, there are support programs that can be put in place. One of the things that, you know, if it were me, what I would do is I want to know who's doing the bullying. And they need some education. They need some, you know, that is something that is not acceptable. You do not do that.
Well, so. Growing up in the sticks and the rural parts of Houston, I can't imagine having a gay student alliance at our high school back in the day. But I guess now, is that more common?
Mm-hmm. It is common. Part of the character ed education piece that is handed down is to promote diversity and multicultural awareness, and in that it does include awareness and acceptance of students regardless of their sexual orientation. And so that is an important piece, and it is supported by most school districts. And, you know, like you said, we did go to school in the sticks, so did we even have an alliance of anything?
No, not really. But I remember there were rumors about teachers that were, there was one teacher that was rumored to be lesbian, and it was such a scandal. And this is like in the 90s, you know, 80s.
It was.
And so I think, you know, things have changed, and I guess high school is becoming more socially accepting of different types of
people. But there's still those individuals that can't be reached, aren't they?
That is correct. I was talking to Brian a couple of weeks ago. I was really bothered by a segment that was on Anderson Cooper. There was an 11-year-old boy, I believe it was in Georgia. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure the city. But the story was about bullying in schools, and how this particular 11-year-old, the mother said that he was being bullied and teased because the kids thought he was gay. And he came home one day from school and just went upstairs, and he committed suicide. And the school, in it, that he committed suicide, I think, on a Friday, and the next Friday was his birthday. Mm. They were showing scenes of the school, like school-wide. They were giving him a birthday party, and kids wrote apology notes. And, you know, all of that was nice, but it was so after the fact. I mean, so late.
I mean, and this probably...
Yeah, oh, that's so great. You know, he's dead, and they're going to have a birthday party for him. Where were they when he really needed
and,
a little
this
bit
didn't
of
happen
understanding?
Overnight. I mean, I'm sure this built up over months or maybe years.
No, and the thing that really kind of stuck out, they had the, it was a private charter school or some kind of, and I'm not familiar with the policies of things in Georgia, but he, the principal or administrator of the school, he said his response when asked, what did you all do? You know, because they asked the mom, did you contact the school? She said, yes, we contacted the school. Mm. And the response she got was, well, we have each one of the students sign an acceptance contract that says that they will not bully and they will respect everybody's individuality and they won't tease. And they said that there was no teasing in the cafeteria, in the classroom, on the playground. The mom said, well, he said he was always teased when he went to the bathroom. So just imagine, you know, the if you can remember going to the bathroom, the nice, wonderful place that it is in a school setting. And there are no cameras, there's no teachers, and they're monitoring that, and that's where the bullying would take place.
It's amazing to me that they relied on, like, a written agreement, that was it.
I was waiting, since it was this was an elementary school, so I was waiting for the, where was the, you know, diversity awareness day? Where was the cultural, you know, character ed? Where was that? No mention of it. And so,
well, that's, and I don't want to indict all individuals, but there's a generational thing there that a lot of the administrators and principals and assistant principals, who in fact have absolutely no tolerance, and they will look the other way at some of the bullying, especially toward GLBT kids.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I know in HISD, their student handbook, it says, you know, this whole list of things you're not supposed to bully, one of them being sexual orientation. However, if you just look gay, they can bully you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not violate the student handbook.
Yeah,
student
it is
code.
And, you know, there was a couple of years ago, we did, well, not we, but, you know, I'm thinking the school-wide, we did there was the theater department put on a show. It was the Matthew Shepard story.
Oh, right.
It was such a wonderful, they put that on 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was such a wonderful piece. You know, things like that, just, you know, putting components like that school-wide, because it opens up the discussion, whereas in some schools, the discussion is never even brought. It's never even talked about. It's just, you know, that's, you know, too bad.
I'm hoping that movies such as Milk that came out will bring a new awareness and kind of discussion in the schools and into that age group. I think our society is changing. And last week we had a group of high school and kind of college age students, and their views on the community, and they don't seem as afraid and kind of fearful as I was, and just, you know, in the 90s, mm-hmm. you know. And so I think we've come a long way just in the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, and see, that's the key piece right there, is the rejection. And, you know, you talk about the transition from elementary, middle school to high school. The biggest part of is, you know, the safety at school, and a lot of times the safety at home. You know, can I come out to my parents? Can I, you know, maybe I'm safe and comfortable coming out to my friends, but coming out to my parents, you know, may not be safe. It's not safe for a lot of kids to do that. And it presents a whole nother issue for the child. If they're being bullied at, you know, school, they can't go home and say, you know, the kids are
teasing. Bullying me because they think mm-hmm. I'm gay, and I happen to be gay, mom,
mm-hmm.
dad.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, they're right.
Yeah, by the way, yeah. they're right, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my question concerning that, what happens when a kid comes out, he goes home, and they throw him out? He's out on the street.
Yeah.
Because the school do anything, or is that just one more lost soul?
Well, in that situation, there are, you know, there are places like Covenant House, mm-hmm. right down the street for homeless teens. Support organizations can provide guidance. Depending on the age of the child,
mm-hmm.
That also kind of runs into, you know, if the child is too young, that would be kind of a CPS issue. But a lot of times, this is usually when the kid's hitting 17, 18 years old, and they're like, well, you know, if you don't change or you don't conform, out you go. At that point, the child would rely on the school to provide services, just based on any kid who didn't have a home. So we mm-hmm. just fall back on the social support services that would be available.
Well, I guess my personal thing is that there is no provision within HISD for sure that has anything to do with gender identity or expression. And there's no, whether it being the handbook or in, for that matter, school policy concerning the employees.
Not that I'm aware of.
There isn't. I assure you.
I assure you.
But the fact is that is part of it. Part of that is the fact that someone could be the example. A young man may not be gay, but he is slight of build, and, you know, a couple of ruffians start calling him that, and he's a target, or she's a target for being a little bit masculine. There's no provision anywhere protecting them.
That is considered bullying. That falls under that would still be bullying, and if it would be up, and then you know you got to look at the parents. The parents have a right, if the child is being bullied and the school does not respond, parents have a right to take it outside of the school if they wish to and pursue legal means, which, you know, then turns it back. The school really does try to respond because they do not want to, you know,
face
them.
Don't they take the bullies and throw them someplace else?
Guantanamo Bay.
Well, no, they have high schools for their kind.
Well, the key thing that we want to do is to educate them, and because, you know, if we start saying we're just going to filter every, you're going to put you over here and put you over there, the key thing is to bring awareness so that we can try and bring everybody together to an awareness of respecting everybody's right to be who they are.
Jennifer, I think you need to run for HISD chair and enact some sort of gender expression and identity clause.
There are some very good people at HISD now that are trying to do just that.
I think there's a calling for you somewhere out there for that. And
you're waving at us?
Yeah, it's time to mention our magic phone number.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Yes. The magic phone number is 713-526-5738.
Call it now.
And donate.
Yes, we're talking to Melissa Earls, a good friend of mine, a longtime friend of mine, about high school issues facing GLBT students these days. But this is part of a program called Queer Voices. And
if you like what you hear...
Exactly.
And you want to hear more like this, then pick up the phone and call.
It doesn't magically run itself. It has to have some sort of money.
Yes.
You know. KPFT is one of those unique stations where we don't have commercials, because almost everything that KPFT does is funded almost totally by the listeners.
So you're not listening to Bob's Bait Shack and Emporium every 3 minutes.
That's right. That's right.
But the necessary
fishing
evil
with Brian
is that we do need to ask for money. I guess
unfortunately,
it's once a quarter.
But we have to do that. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And so this is the time for that, and now is the time for you to call 713-526 KPFT, or please go to the website if you want to use your credit card and just get the miles for that. It's kpft.org, and there's a button to donate now.
And if for some reason you're not able to do it tonight, and you can tomorrow, the next day, whatever, when you do, be sure to put down that you're donating for Queer Voices, because it does reflect on our show, and we have certain goals set for us.
And they're high goals, and we need to fill them, or, you know.
That's right.
They're going to kick us out, and then we'll be...
And if you want to show up at the front door at 10:30 at night with a large bag of cash after we get over being very suspicious of you, we're happy to take cash.
You know, we don't ask questions about
we're not. Yeah, we may be suspicious of you, but not your cash.
We're not going to say anything. You know, we'll just take it and go with it. Melissa, how did you get into counseling, and how did you end up at the high school for the performing and visual arts?
Well, I started my education career at Sam Houston High School as a history teacher, and went to Houston Baptist University and got my master's in psychology. I taught at Hightower High School for 2 years, mm-hmm. and got the opportunity to get my first counseling experience at the high school for the performing and visual arts, and I've been there since. Counseling has been my focus for the last 10 years, and we'll remain that way.
I remember when you were crazy in high school, though.
I was a pal in high school.
Yes, you were. You were a pal.
And that was my first counseling experience.
Exactly.
It's a peer assistance and leadership in the high school. That's one thing our little sticks did give us. We had a peer support group. It really was the popular people. I have no idea how I got on there, but...
I was, as you can tell, I was a big nerd and geek in high school.
And so was I.
But now I'm kind of coming to my own, and I enjoy...
I have not.
...this portion of my life. Now, so, do a lot of people come to you at the high school and come out as gay and say, you know, I'm gay, what do I do? Or how often does that happen? Or just people just... so open that they don't...
Well, in general, you know, students typically at this age, they start, you know, the hormones and everything are going, and they want to do something about that, and yeah. They get curious about sex and their sexuality, and if I'm approached about that particular issue, what I usually do is I'll ask them, you know, I go into, you know, just the safety mode of where are you, what you doing. I'll give them references to speak with the wonderful people at Hatch, because a support group with, you know, the appropriate support services is so important for teens.
Which is part of the Montrose Counseling Center, we mm-hmm. must mention. The wonderful people there and the work that they do in many organizations and mm-hmm. umbrella.
I was going to say them next. We've actually had a lot of support from the Montrose Counseling Center as far as professional development. They've come in and serviced our staff, and they do a wonderful job and provide a wonderful service for the community as a whole.
And they do have a hotline too, and I don't have the number, but you know, for help in, you know, those hours where you may need it. And it might have helped the guy in Atlanta, in Georgia.
Yeah, and I was actually brushing up on a couple of things today. There's a program in Massachusetts. I thought it was just wonderful. They actually have a task force for the protection of students who are being bullied and who are gay. They have like in Houston, they have the gang task force to try and prevent gang violence. In Massachusetts, they have a whole anti-bullying task force.
That is terrific.
They go in and they provide training, support. It's if something's going on at a school or somebody, it's like they act like SWAT. They go in there and they, you know, they try and remedy the problem. You know, I thought, wow, that's pretty neat. And yep. So just, you know, programs like that, you know, that was one of the things I wanted to, you know, kind of get to. What do you do if, you know, you feel like you've tried everything and the services that are available aren't working? You got to get active. You got to fund shows like this, call in and give money.
Oh, we love.
So we can continue to spread the word about how do you get support for your children and or sometimes for yourself.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I was going to ask. What can we do to help? I mean, you're a terrific counselor. You wouldn't be here and we're talking about these issues, but there are a lot of other counselors out there. What do we do to get them help to the kind of training they need, or like you were saying, some of the middle schools that don't even have counselors?
Yeah.
What is it we can do and our listeners do to help make life better in school?
Well, just like anything else, the taxpayer, you know, really makes the rules, but you got to show up and speak up and say what you want. You know, attend a school board meeting. Go to a city council meeting. Talk to your school board representative. Tell them, you know, hey, I'm having this. My school doesn't have a counselor. We need a counselor in the school because these issues are happening. If you have a counselor in your school, it may not be that they're, you know, homophobic or they're, they may just not know how to handle the situation. They may just need training. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that, and I thought about, you know, my own situation. I'm obviously African American.
That's not obvious.
Okay. Anyway. Well, anyway, I was thinking, you know, back, and this was the 90s, as Brian said, we're in school, and I'd get so excited and geared up when we got to the Civil Rights Movement. I wanted to learn, and it was, boom, open book test. I was like, hey.
Oh, we grew up in such a wonderfully redneck
part of it.
Yeah. I grew up thinking I was the only gay in our high school, but yeah. There's been a couple of others. And, you know, the new thing now is Facebook, and all of the old high school people now, they all know I'm gay. So I'm thinking that, you know, maybe now it's more open and people are more visible.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
You know, and it's more accepting now.
Yeah.
Well, Melissa Earls, thank you very much. You're the high school counselor for the High School for the Performing and Visual Arts.
I'm one of the counselors.
Is there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to make sure we covered? Don't want to let you get away without having a... Oh, yeah.
Let's give a small plug to your counseling. You have a website. You have it's called Peace of Mind Counseling.
Mm-hmm.
The website is www.peaceofmindcounseling.com. And you can contact Melissa through there, and if you have any issues or any kind of GLBT requests that you maybe talk to her about, she can be contacted there. And we appreciate you, Melissa, mm-hmm. coming on.
Yeah.
And
yeah, call in, make some pledges tonight.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Melissa. Really appreciate you coming.
Enjoyed it. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
I wanted to tell everybody about Brian's salad bowl here.
Listener contributions play an extremely important role in the quality of the music and news you hear on this station. If you've never made a contribution to KPFT, we need to hear from you. With the threat of reduced federal funding for public radio, first-time contributors are more important now than ever. Call 713-526-5738 now to make your tax-deductible contribution or pledge online at kpft.org. We need your pledge. You make a huge difference in this radio station when you pledge to KPFT. Again, that number is 713-526-KPFT. Call and make your tax-deductible contribution today. You can also pledge online at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston.
I'm Ray Hill. You're listening to radio station KPFT Houston. We're a child of the Pacifica Foundation, and Pacifica Foundation was founded in 1949 and virtually invented public radio. Much of what you know about the history of yourself, your country, your society, much you understand about your culture has grown out of public radio and television stations that had their roots in Pacifica Foundation. We need and deserve your continuous support. Listen carefully for the number. The host will tell you how you can become a listener subscriber to this important media effort.
Everybody that's listening to this here song.
listening to KPFT 90.1, Houston.
Think about why you listen to KPFT and the stories you've heard. You listen because you hear stories you don't hear, can't hear anywhere else. It's as simple as that. There's no other news source that's even structured or set up quite like public radio. You certainly won't find it on TV or commercial radio. And it's not just an hour a week or once or twice a day. It's every day. There are some who have their radio on all day, some who listen in the morning, or some only in the car. Suddenly, your membership must sound like quite a deal when you look at what you get. In fact, you might even be thinking that you haven't been giving enough and it's time to increase your gift. But the important thing is to give. Call 713-526-KPFT or join online at kpft.org. This is KPFT, Houston.
And the super secret number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. It's the magic phone number to show your support to KPFT and Queer Voices and the type of radio programming that we do. You know, I used to work in commercial radio.
You did?
You did. Yes.
Tell us about the old days, Jack.
The old days? The old days. I used to work for that company with the first three letters of the alphabet. Which at one time was
that's the wrong one.
That's the one that came to my mind.
Actually, the joke was it used to in the early days of TV it used to stand for Almost Broadcast Company. commercial radio was fun. I enjoyed it, had a good time, made some money in it. But I'm here as a volunteer on non-commercial radio, on community radio. And we say that, you know, Pacific is the inventor of community radio in this country, listener-sponsored radio. And by listener-sponsored, we mean you. We want you to become a sponsor so that we are only answerable to our listeners.
Why is this important, Jack? Why do we need community radio?
Because it actually does what the FCC has wanted radio and TV to do, is to serve the community interest. Serving the community interest by talking about issues in the community, whether it's GLBT issues, whether it's about traffic, whether it's about crime, whether it's about any number of issues that happen here in Houston. And we have environmental shows on KPFT. We have that wonderful show in the morning, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman.
Oh, yes. I love listening to that.
Boy, I'll tell you, if she ever calls me, I'm going to be... because she can be really, really tough on her guest, and that's the way it should be. Amy Goodman does fabulous radio, and we're real proud to have her as part of KPFT. And
we have after hours there in the early hours of Sunday morning.
There's another great program that I really like on Thursdays, I believe. It's called The New Capital Show. It talks about, finances and how screwed up everything is. And, you know, he was talking about this long before any of this other stuff happened that was reported on the other media. But, you know, it's a very personal media. It's like we can talk to you. We can talk to you on a one-to-one basis. That's what radio is. Radio is talking to one person. And many one persons, that's basically what we do. So we're asking you to call and support community radio here at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
Now, of course, KPFT is the number one spot on my radio in my truck. And I tune in at all hours of the day, and it's always something different. It's always something interesting and fun to listen to. I like listening to the BBC News in the morning instead of the droning on of our local radio programs in the morning. I think it's interesting to listen to that. And you know,
I like the BBC.
I do. I do too. But that KPFT is one of the stations that brings you that, and it is not free. We do not have, like I said earlier, we do not have Bob's Bait and Tackle Emporium.
Well, one of the things is we say the BBC, and if you've ever listened to the BBC News, what you get is a different perspective on the news that you may hear all the rest of the day on the other radio stations or TV stations you might listen to. You get a different perspective. That's what KPFT is all about. It gives you the other perspective to what you won't hear anywhere else. Community radio is about the individuals in the community speaking directly to one another.
And you can't do it anyplace else. We're the only station like that here in Houston. It's KPFT. It's your radio station. And the only way we can stay on, the only way you can still have Queer Voices on Monday nights is, of course, calling in and pledging to support us at 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT.
And we're not asking for a lot. I mean, you could call in and donate $1,000. That would be great. That would make us very, very happy. But, you know, just anything that you can give, and it all adds up. And more importantly, it shows that we have listeners that listen to our show and are supporting at any level and are part of the community radio station here in Houston, and especially the gay voice that we are, and kind of filled the void of no newspaper. And we fill it quite well, I would think.
Well,
and
yes,
worthy of your support.
Well, I mean, we have a monthly magazines, and we've lost our weekly newspaper. And you won't see a lot of gay-friendly reporting in of our events going on in the community in the one newspaper we do.
I rarely see anything.
You know, Alan Bernstein, who is a reporter at the Chronicle.
Oh, yes.
The Chronicle.
I know. I saw that.
And the Chronicle is just hemorrhaging people one after another because people are just not paying for the paper like they used to. Yeah. In fact, I'm about to give up my subscription that I've had for 20-some years because there's nothing left of it.
And you can get it online.
You can get it online, yes.
So I think that's kind of the wave of the future. In terms of print.
Well,
so
there's a lot of them. I mean, there was the whole talk about making newspapers nonprofits. And there's a whole different story around that. But we're sort of the same way. We are your voice.
We're kind of the audio newspaper.
Very much so, especially for the GLBT community. We get the people on here that you want to hear from. The organizations get to speak out. And it's an access to those organizations. You hear about them here. Where else would you hear about them? Word of mouth may be the only way, or a flyer you might see in a bar somewhere.
You know, doing all the community events and publicizing them, I've become very, very aware of what's going on, and people have now started to come to me to ask what's going on, and I think better yet, they could listen to Queer Voices and find out once a week.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we don't talk about the archives or the iTunes availability of the show. So it could be your own personal show that you could keep and listen to at your leisure on your iPod.
Exactly. You know, that's one of the things, the beauties that KPFT has. If you miss a show or you can't listen to us after 10 or from 9, for that matter, you can go to the archives whenever you want to while you're on your computer and pull it up. Go to kpft.org, click on the archives, and then go to our time slot, and you can either download it or listen to it at that time. That's something you can do here at KPFT.
Now,
we have a pledge.
We have, thank God.
We have one person to thank. Her name is Dasha.
Dasha.
Thank you, Dasha.
I believe I'm pronouncing that
and
correctly.
And if we mispronounce that, we still appreciate your pledge.
That's right.
And we apologize.
Jimmy Carper is out in the Pledge Central area.
I like how you say out, like a Canadian.
Yes.
That's right. Well,
out.
Like I am one, eh?
A.
A.
Out.
And, yeah, like I'm going up there.
Oh, Jimmy.
Easy.
Exactly. Jimmy,
so,
are you out there?
Yeah, it's going to.
Yes, I am.
Well, how are things out in Phone Central? Donor Central.
So quiet.
Like a little church mouse.
Yeah.
That's not what we want.
Oh, that's Jimmy, all right. Church mouse. That describes Jimmy.
Oh, there are probably many words that describe
Jimmy. You know, we did have a caller earlier who said, we don't give the number out enough.
And what is that magic phone number?
713-526-5738. Or easier, 526-KPFT.
And you can always go to Twitter and log on to Queer Voices, and I have posted the number there, but it would be easier just to go to the KPFT website and
the website
donate
has
electronically.
And if you're on the internet and you are part of Facebook and the Facebook phenomenon, you can go and join the Queer Voices group on
Ooh.
Facebook.
We are part of that phenomenon.
Yes, and that is where we publish the weekly show and have events. I publish an event for the Spring Fun Drive, so you can kind of keep up with that and call in. Just go to Facebook and do a search on Queer Voices and join the more than 200 people that are part of that at this point.
That number, again, since we are not giving it out enough, is 713-526-KPFT. KPFT is the station call letters. KPFT is pretty easy to remember. 526-KPFT.
713-JAM-KPFT.
In case you don't know what KPFT stands for, it's Pacifica, Texas. Pacifica, Texas.
And then the one in, what is the one in?
How about that?
KPFA? What does the A stand for?
They were the first one.
So, okay.
And KPFW is, or WPFW is Washington, and KPFK is Los Angeles.
And how is K related to Los Angeles?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. Hey,
we got A for Berkeley, P for Texas,
mysteries.
But K for...
If you'll call in
K
and
for
pledge,
cookie.
K well, for if you'll call in and crazy. Pledge, then we will give you the answer to that mystery.
Yes, and we'll give you plenty of other things. Anything that you request, I mean, we're here to raise some money for KPFT.
That's right.
There are premiums if you donate so much money.
That's right.
And where could they find out about that, Jack?
When they call up, they can ask.
That's right. Jimmy's out there. Call up and ask for Jimmy.
Please call Jimmy because I don't think he knows that, and he needs to be put on the spot.
Yes, and of course, if you're up in the early hours on Sunday, you can hear Jimmy on After Hours.
And if you're not listening to tonight and you're listening to a podcast later, the fund drive goes until the 24th, I believe. And you can donate online and specify Queer Voices as the show of designation. We would appreciate that because your donation is a vote for Queer Radio in Houston.
Call us now. Call us now.
It's 713-526-5738.
I want to hear from you.
Ring, ring, ring.
Yes, and our phones actually do ring.
They do. They actually
we
have
to go and check them. I thought that they were broken because they weren't ringing. So we need for you to go out there and test the phone line, 713-526-KPFT.
We know you can't spend all your time in Iraq to follow what's going on, so you can count on KPFT to do it for you. You can't spend your days following the new agenda in Congress or its dealings with the White House, so you can count on KPFT to do that too. You can't spend your days listening to all the new music to find the best artists and songs. You can count on KPFT. Your support keeps KPFT on the air and gives you news, information, and music you don't hear anywhere else. That's why we're asking for your financial support today. Please make your gift to KPFT.org or call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT right now. Continuing to meet your expectations, KPFT depends on your financial support. Contributing listeners provide over 90% of KPFT's funding. So please take a moment right now and make a gift to KPFT at 713-526-5738 or online at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston. If you plan to call today or later this week to renew your membership, please consider increasing your contribution. As you've probably heard in the news, Congress has often considered slashing budgets for public interest services. As a result, federal funding for public radio may be reduced. That funding may even be eliminated. Though only a small percentage of KPFT's budget comes from federal funding, this funding crisis means that your contribution is more important now than ever. Please consider increasing your contribution if you can. Every dollar you contribute will make a big difference in the music and news you've come to appreciate from KPFT. Call 713-526-5738 to make your tax-deductible contribution or pledge online at kpft.org. Again, that number is 713-526-KPFT. Pledge now. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston.
You have been listening. Sorry, wrong one.
You were waving at us, or were you just saying hi?
No.
He doesn't have his headset on. He can't hear a word we're saying.
Do we have any call-ins?
Unfortunately, no, we don't.
No. What are people doing?
Well, obviously, they didn't have the telephone number.
They're
713-526-5738.
Well, is there some gay TV program on opposite us, you know, like...
It is. It's at Cafe Adobe, and they all go there and they drink.
No, I'm talking about on TV. Is there... I don't even know what some of those reality shows are.
Well, I'm a big fan of Logo, and I watch gay TV all the time, and it's all...
And so what's on... against us.
There's a lot of, I think there's
what
like...
What are they programmed against us?
Repeats.
It's a lot of gay repeats.
There's a lot of lesbian shows, like Bad Girls and X's and O's. And
what about tranny shows?
Well, there's not a lot of tranny shows, but there was a special on Southern Comfort, which you were part of and you have an appearance in.
Yes.
So you're on gay TV.
Yeah. Isn't there a talk show, a trans talk show?
I think so. I don't...
Like a bachelorette type thing?
Oh, yeah. The kind of... The love, the trans, was it trans love?
I don't know. I don't get logos.
Oh,
so
it was
so
about
it's up to you.
Your to go.
To fill,
no, it's not on anymore, but, no. Logo's part of a gay media, and Queer Voices is also part of a gay media. And it's kind of an old one that's stuck around, and we hope that it will continue because I think it's very relevant. And
Logo is actually owned by CBS.
Yes.
We're not owned by CBS.
No, we are not.
We're not owned by CBS.
We're not funded
no.
by the deep pockets.
We're owned by you.
And we need some maintenance here. We need to, you know, get the money flowing because we've got to continue.
Yeah, 713-526-5738. Call in now and make a pledge. Donate.
You know, 1,000, 5,000, 10,000, whatever you have lying around.
This is important radio. KPFT has the programs you won't hear anywhere else in the Houston media or around the country. And there aren't that many GLBT programming anywhere on the radio. And Queer Voices and After Hours are two that you have right here in Houston.
And I don't really want to blow our own horn, but we do put together weekly...
Do it.
We put together a show of several interviews that are relevant to that week and things that are going on, fundraisers or events. And we do that week in and week out and try to remain relevant and worthy of your
support.
Audience. Yeah, and
yes.
Your support.
Well, next week we're going to be talking about Coming Out, and it's Queer Music Heritage Week. In June, we're going to be talking about Pride, because there's a lot of different Pride events that are going on. So we'll be doing some interviewing there, probably talk to the Grand Marshals.
Why, yes. Pride is why is Pride in June, by the way?
Because that's when the riots were in New York City. They had no idea when they rioted at the end of June in New York City that this would become a worldwide phenomenon and that it would be 100 degrees in Texas.
I wish they had thought of that.
But well, you know, that's why they moved it to the nighttime.
Actually, though, when the Stonewall riots happened in New York, it was really hot. It was, and that was early for that heat wave in New York.
And so that caused some of the animosity and anger.
Yes, it got them fired up. It got them definitely fired.
Well, the cops had a lot to do with it, too.
I can actually remember the news coverage of that.
Really?
Really?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
That was 40 years ago, Glenn. How would you possibly know?
Oh, I know.
I didn't see that. I missed that news coverage.
Did they have TV then?
Did they just beat it out in like sticks and like smoke?
Yeah,
signals?
Jungle drums and all that kind of stuff, sure. No, actually, in Canada, in Canada, you have much better international news coverage than we do here. So
yes, yes, exactly. Because, you know, 1969 was also the year of Woodstock. It was also the year of the first person on the moon.
That's right.
What a wonderful time. I was not... around, but
you missed it all.
I missed it all.
You had to read it in history books.
So, Jennifer, you...
yes, what are you about to say?
Oh, it's a dig.
Really, you volunteer here, right? You volunteer because you care.
Absolutely.
You participate because you care in this program, right?
Absolutely.
And the people who are listening participate by listening because they care. That's right.
But we ask a little bit more.
And they can show their...
That's right. We know that you care, and so... Well, what we need for you to do is call 713-528-5738. It's dyslexic.
Oh, don't mess it up.
I know. It's 526-5738. That's where the 8 goes.
In the old days, it was 713-Jackson-6. KPFT.
Oh, yes. Oh, wow.
Or as Jimmy said, it was Jam KPFT.
But since you listen because you care...
Because you're gay and you like to hear gay radio.
That's right. We need for you to also show that you care by participating in the show financially.
Absolutely. Remember to call 713-526-5738. This is Queer Voices. I'm Jennifer Renee.
Jack Walensky.
And this is Brian Levinka.
And we had a few people on the show tonight that we probably should say thank you to.
Well, we had Brian Riedel, Craig Farrell, and Andre Bourgeois. Talking about the ARC, the Collective of History in Houston.
And Melissa Earls,
who is a former high school mate of mine from Columbia High School back in the day, and we appreciate her
coming
on.
That's her claim to fame.
Yes. Thank you.
have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
We know you can't spend all your time in Iraq to follow what's going on, so you can count on KPFT to do it for you. You can't spend your days following the new agenda in Congress or its dealings with the White House, so you can count on KPFT to do that too. You can't spend your days listening to all the new music to find the best artists and songs. You can count on KPFT. Your support keeps KPFT on the air and gives you news, information, and music you don't hear anywhere else. That's why we're asking for your financial support today. Please make your gift to kpft.org or call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT right now. Continuing to meet your expectations, KPFT depends on your financial support. Contributing listeners provide over 90% of KPFT's funding. So please take a moment right now and make a gift to KPFT at 713-526-5738 or online at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
The following program may contain language or imagery that may be offensive to some listeners. Discretion is advised.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.